Good evening, Philadelphia. Sometimes I say that and we're not in Philadelphia, so it feels good to say that. Good evening, Philadelphia. Thank you for coming to 30th Street Station. Take your seats, it's time to play. I apologize for the delay. Apparently when the government runs certain services, being on time is something that suffers. It's nothing to do with us. So, first things first, cell phones, just flip them off for us. This room is unusual, so normally if we're in a theater setting and you whisper to the person next to you, like the seats in the aisles will eat the sound. In this cavernous room, whispers sound like you're shouting. So keep it as quiet as you can. Have a seat. Enjoy the show. Cell phones off. If you filled out a card at the beginning, that's where we're going to do questions and answers. We're going to keep this thing pretty short. We want to thank the Mutual Fund Store and PI Dental. They're our corporate sponsors. We got applause. Thank you. Applause. PI Dental Center, home of Teeth in a Day. Your ticket really only pays for your book. The corporate sponsors are the reason that we can bring in the authors and have you guys meet them. And with any luck, we'll have plenty of time for everybody to meet Eric and get their book signed right on the back of this. So, without further delay, I would like to welcome to the stage Chris DeGaulle and Eric Bowling.
Mr. Eric Bowling, everybody. From The Five, fresh off the set of The Five, everybody. He made it. He's a little late, but he made it.
Hold on. I wasn't late. Amtrak was late, and guess why? The government runs Amtrak, right? You can't trust them doing anything. Sorry, Amtrak.
Now, wait.
Sorry, Amtrak.
I heard you had a meeting with Loretta Lynch. Is that...
Yeah, we went to her train. We spent an hour. We talked about my son. That's all we talked about.
How many of you have a copy of Wake Up America? Huh? Is this your first book?
It's my first book. Yep. So maybe 9 or 10 years, people have said, you have a great conservative voice. You're saying what I think. Can you put it in print? Let's do a book. Can you put a book together? You know, I have to wait for the right time.
Yeah.
Boy, is it the right time. With this election and with what's going on the left and the right bifurcating, and then on the right they're splitting further, this was the time to write the book.
Glad you wrote one. Was it hard?
No.
It was not hard.
No, in fact, it was so easy because Barack Obama said he was going to fundamentally transform America. I started writing and it just kind of flowed. So it was so easy. I thanked him in the book. I dedicated the book to him.
Did you see that? By the way, there's some cards going around.
Chris, I signed the book on The Five yesterday to Barack Obama. I'm sending it. I think it's 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. Hopefully he gets it. I'll let you know if he responds.
I would love to be there if he gets it. If you have questions for Eric, please jot them down on the note cards. We're going to collect those because we're running a little short on time, and I know Eric would like to meet all of you. We're not going to spend a ton of time up here as we'd originally planned, but I want to get some of your questions to Eric, so please jot them down, and I'll ask him as soon as I get a few in my hand. But let's start. How many of you heard him on the show earlier this week when we interviewed him prior to... By the way, thank you for listening. Okay, good. I got a little worried. Wonder what the hell I'm waking up at 4 a.m. for if people aren't listening to the thing. Eric has one of the most fascinating... Do you guys know his story? How many of you have heard his career trajectory, Eric's? It's tremendous. You've gone from baseball to finance to megawatt cable television star.
Yes, sir.
Could you have ever imagined it?
Never saw that coming. And that's really another reason why I wrote the book, because this country is a cornucopia of opportunity. A guy like me coming from the absolute dead broke Chicago background, having no way out, looked like everything was, I was going to be there forever, finding a way out through baseball, was able to get a scholarship to Rollins College. I would never have been able to afford college without that. And then playing, in, like you said in the book, I blew my rotator cuff out very early, and I had to go find a job. I went back to Chicago. My father saw me moping around for a while. He dropped the Chicago Tribune on the bed. He said, get up and go do something. And I think, you know, they instilled that value. That's that grit. You know, you get knocked down, you get yourself back up. And I did. I went and there was a snowstorm the day that they were hiring at Mobil Oil and in one of the suburbs of Chicago. And I figured I'll be one of the few people applying for this job as a big winter storm in Chicago. I got there. There were 600 people waiting to apply for about five spots, marketing rep jobs for Mobil. And I waited. I waited. I finally got my turn. This is true, and I know I've heard this story since, but this is absolutely honest to God true. I'm waiting with a group of 600 people, so maybe, you know, this whole room is packed. Finally, my turn. I get up there, and there's a group of management, and a guy pulls a pen out of his pocket, and he says, sell me the pen. You've heard it since. I think it was even in Wolf of Wall Street now. He says, sell me the pen, and here I am, like 23 years old. I mean, oh, my. Now, that's it. I have no job. This is terrible. And something clicked, and I was just like, you know what? It's a great pen. I'll give you this pen. I'll sell you this pen for 50 cents, but I'll tell you what, I'll make it better. I'll sell you three pens for a buck. He looked, what the guy who was interviewing me, looked at the other three, and they gave him a nod. I went back to my seat. I knew I had the job. Whatever I said, I had no idea.
Wow.
But I said the right thing. Turns out the job they were trying to fill was a marketing rep job for an oil company, and your job is to bring prices down to sell more gas, gallons, bring prices down to sell more pens. It was the right time. It was the right moment. It was one of those things.
Wow.
So I went to work for Mobil. Worked my way through the system at Mobil Oil. I realized that the people in New York were the ones making all the money. Now, I'm not afraid to say I'm a free market capitalist. I was poor, and I didn't want to be poor anymore. So I got myself to New York. I walked on the trading floor of the New York Mercantile Exchange. And it's a crazy place. There's 2,000, 3,000 people running around, yelling all day long, screaming, papers going everywhere. I was like, I like this. This is like sports. I'm gonna see if I can make my way here. Spent some time, just whatever, doing odd jobs. Finally got enough money together to rent a seat, put some money up. And it worked out because I ended up doing well with that. And then from there, CNBC, about 15 years down the road, and I had become on the board of directors of the Merck. CNBC came up, and oil was going to $40 for the first time on the way up. And a camera crew was walking around, and a reporter, I can't remember who it was, she says, hey, what's going on? And I give her like 30, 45 seconds on why oil is going up, and they said, can you do that tomorrow? I did it every day for about 2 weeks, and then they decided they're going to do a show called Fast Money. I don't know if anyone knows Fast Money. I was one of the original panelists on Fast Money. So it all worked out. The point, getting back to the career, the point is the country is so vast and so filled with opportunity. I watched Barack Obama fundamentally want to change the country, pulling the country left, destroying opportunity, making success and capitalism a dirty word, and I wanted it to stop. So I wrote the book, and I was unabashedly pro-free market. It was the right time.
Yeah. All right, so you're a creature of Wall Street, and this is one of the things that I wanted to talk to you about. Wall Street is, as you know, politically, always bastardized by the left, and in some cases by the right, and it's interesting because we're in an election where there's a woman on the Democrat side who's made obscene sums of money making speeches to Wall Street firms that we have no idea what she said, but you've got to presume, I'm sure you've been in a few of those meetings where high-profile people have come in and spoken and made big money doing so. What do you make of that? What are we to make of that? And what's Trump's relationship then with Wall Street?
Start with the first one. For a long time, I've been on Fox saying she needs to release the transcripts of those speeches. Hillary Clinton right now is claiming to be an anti-Wall Street. She's going to clean up the corruption on Wall Street. She's going to push back on the Wall Street fat cats. You can't say that if you spent the last 10 years taking $200,000, $300,000, $400,000 for a speech, 45-minute speech, plus first-class airfare. If they're hiring you to come talk to them for $400,000 or $500,000 all in, that's their cost, she's telling their management something they want to hear. So if they're hearing, I'm likely going to be the next president, and don't worry about it because I think you're doing things right, and I'm not going to change the way you do business, they're going to continue to pay her to do that. Well, that's fine, except when she leaves there and comes and gets on a stage and says, no, I'm anti-Wall Street, I'm going to clean up the corruption, I'm going to lock them down, I'm going to break up the big banks. Some of them want to break up the big banks. She can't have it both ways. Release the transcripts of the speech. I think you're going to see a lot of interesting stuff.
And yes. And on that point, because you know so many of these people, you know these executives, you've interviewed them on television over the years, why? How? Can you explain to me how it is that so many of them vote for the left that savages them publicly regularly?
I have no idea.
What
is
that?
Absolutely bizarre to me. Unless there's a payoff. There's follow the money. Always follow the money. You know it's going to lead to something. There's got to be a pay to play, a quid pro quo. Wall Street is very liberal. There's a lot of very wealthy people who like to give their money away, apparently. That's the only explanation. I don't have a logical explanation.
Is it guilt?
All.
I've always wondered if wealthy people are guilty about their wealth.
No idea. I'm not. I like it. I mean...
How many of you are wealthy, guilty people? Anybody in here?
Kyle, my assistant's back there, and she says, stop telling the same story, but it really is an important story, the six-year-old story. Did anyone know it? I was 6 years old in Chicago, and my mom brought me to what was called Valueville. It was before Kmart, but it's a Kmart-type store. And she said, you need sneakers. Go pick out a pair of sneakers. Well, of course I go to these beautiful, gorgeous Pro-Keds. Amazing sneakers. I love them. I walk back, I hand them to her, and I'll never forget the face she made, this pure sadness on her face. And she said, the words came out, son, we can't afford those. And it was the moment of enlightenment for me. I had never realized, I'm 6 or 7, you don't think about these things. But at that moment, I realized there are people who have and people who have not. We were one of the have-nots. And I felt so bad for her, I felt so bad for me, I couldn't get the Pro Keds. But it was the spark that made me never, ever be ashamed of being wealthy, of being successful, always work for it, and be proud of it.
Harum. I know you've been supportive of Donald Trump, and I wasn't going to make this evening about him or really even them, because we've got plenty of time to talk about them. But the one thing I did want to know, because you come from the market, because you come from Wall Street, I heard Ben Stein say a few weeks ago that Donald Trump, while he said he's going to vote for him, doesn't know bleep about economics. Do you think that's true? Does Donald Trump understand Wall Street, the marketplace, the free market, fundamentally at his core as you do?
Maybe not as core as I do, but I think he does. Look, what's the old saying? A fool and his money are soon separated. He has billions of dollars. So people say, well, his father gave him money, and if he just invested that money in the S&P, he would be doing better. It doesn't matter. So a lot of people have been given money and lost it all, a lot of them. So whatever he's doing something right as far as business is concerned. What I liked about Donald Trump from the beginning was he was an outsider. He didn't want to do, but you can't run a company the way you run government. You just can't. Mm-hmm. You can't have that much waste, fraud, abuse, corruption, payoffs. You'll be out of business in 5 minutes. Donald Trump has kept businesses surviving for a long time. Maybe he surrounds himself with really smart people. I know his kids are brilliant.
Yeah.
Donald Jr., Eric, and Ivanka are absolutely brilliant people. So the point is, I tell you what, though. Here we are, though. And we have a point in time now where it's going to be Donald Trump or Hillary Clinton. You better, if you're conservative and you want the country to stay at least remotely successful and conservative, you better vote for Donald Trump. Hold your nose even if you don't like him. There are a lot of reasons why Hillary Clinton would really screw up the country. Supreme Court is one. We've talked about that a lot. Federal judges that are appointed by White Houses. You would have the whole judicial branch being liberal, and that means your First Amendment's at risk, your Second Amendment guns are at risk, immigration is at risk, abortion is done, affirmative action is locked in place for a long time. The country will look a lot different 10 years from now if she wins this one election.
Talk to me about Fox News. And throughout this primary, Fox News has been almost as much of the news as Trump himself. for the debates, the moderating, the war with Megyn Kelly, Roger Ailes, his influence. Is Fox pro-Trump? Is Fox anti-Trump? When you hear people talk about Fox News and Roger Ailes and this wizard behind the curtain, and do the hosts, are they autonomous and do what they wish, or are they given marching orders? When you hear those things, just as a media observer, it's interesting to me. What's your reaction to all of that?
I will tell every single one of you, I'll look you right in the eye. I've never once been told what to say or think about one topic or one candidate in 9 years there, never once. So Roger, he would never do that. No, he's clearly conservative, and he has a conservative lean, and he maybe hires conservative people. I'll give him that. I'm conservative. I came from NBC. I got hired there. But never once have I been told by Roger or anyone who works for Roger, you need to go with this guy, or you need to steer clear of this, or this is where we're going to put out an ideology. Here's where Fox is on something. Donald Trump is the perfect example of that. You literally have almost 50% of the hosts who like what he's saying and the other 50% who can't stand what he's saying. And no one has been ever told, get on board with him or get on board with Megyn or get on board with, get off the Trump train. No one's ever been told that. Hosts are, and contributors are free to pick and choose and think the way they want.
So the Megyn Kelly thing, and I know she's not here and I don't mean to make you her spokesman, but that was authentically her and Trump alone. That had nothing to do with anything but a real, authentic moment that happened. He got mad at her. They were upset. They reconvened, made amends, and all is well. That was purely between the two of them.
Absolutely, as far as I know, yes. I mean, I don't know who else it would be.
Yeah.
It certainly wouldn't be Roger telling Megyn to say something and have a fight with Trump. That doesn't make sense. Roger is... He's conservative, and he likes to see the conservative. I'm not speaking for Roger, but I look at what's going on with the Speaker Ryan saying he's not ready to endorse him, and the group of Washington insiders who can't say they're on board with Trump, even though Hillary Clinton is the only other alternative right now. Roger doesn't like that. He likes to see a united conservative voice. I wish we could all just, look, they lost.
Yep.
Trump won. Get over it. If you don't get in line, you're going to have a President Clinton.
How many of you
Listen, you guys probably like George Will. I think George Will is doing more damage to the Republican Party than anyone in the last 10 years.
Well, and to that point, George Will is still...
And by the way, Chris... He's a Fox contributor.
That's what I was going to say. He's still very much on the payroll
right.
and part of Fox.
And this is what I'm saying. No one is told what to say or what to think.
Right.
Because you're seeing internal two sides of a lot of topics being represented at Fox.
How many of you watch The Five? Five viewers? Good. That's good news. Talk to me about that concept. It is a wildly popular show, and it's one of the younger shows on Fox. What was the impetus for the idea, and it's working. How do you explain it?
I'll tell you how it came about. 5 o'clock, Glenn Beck was handling the 5 o'clock slot very well. The numbers were fantastic, doing very well. In July 1st of 2011, Glenn Beck said to Roger, the story is that he said, I'm done at the end of the summer. So somewhere around September, you better find someone else to fill in the 5 o'clock slot. I wrote an email to Roger Ailes saying, hey boss, I'd kill for that 5 o'clock slot. Within like an hour, which is unusual because Roger takes his time to get back to, within an hour, I get an email back from Roger Ailes saying, yeah, you and 500 other people, but thank you for the note.
So that was, may I stop you there for a second?
Yeah.
So Glenn was done, and it was just sort of Wild West open territory
on
a major news network.
No one knew what was next because like I said, he was going to be done at the end of the summer. Well, he called back apparently a day or two later and said, check that, forget that, I'm done at the end of the week. So now, for the first few days, they did some replays of Glenn Beck. And then July 11th, Roger had the idea, and he'll tell you this, he's talked about this in speeches, to put five people around a table and see how it works out. Just to buy time until September when he can put whoever he thought should get the 5 o'clock slot in there. So he brought a table from one of the back rooms. They spray painted it black. They took five chairs from Huckabee's to be live in that studio. They took five Huckabee chairs, put it around, and now the real genius of Roger Ailes comes. Who am I going to put in those five seats? So he literally just started picking names from people who were working at Fox. He went bowling in the middle seat as the, I don't know, the family guy, the business guy. He went Perino in that seat as the political insider. She's been, you know, George Bush's press secretary. He went funny guy over on the side, Gutfeld. You got to have a liberal foil next to you. That was Bob Beckel. Perfect, perfect casting. And then he went, where am I going to put the beautiful, smart, attractive conservative? Who is that going to be? And it was Kimberly Guilfoyle and Andrea Tanteros going back and forth, and they were sharing the seat for the better part of 2 years until this Outnumbered show came along, and Roger decided to put Andrea up at noon, and Kimberly was there full-time on the fifth seat. The chemistry was amazing from the start. By the end of, like, the first 2 or 3 weeks, we were beating Glenn Beck's number, and we were never going to leave. And that, I think it caught everyone by surprise.
Why does it work?
Why does it work? Chemistry is a funny thing. It's almost like you
five can't... people getting along impossible.
And we don't always get along. I mean, maybe that's why it works, because we all have our very, very, very strong opinions, all of us. Five people with very strong opinions.
Is Dana Perino, honest to God, that sweet? Is she really as sweet as she appears? I wanna believe she breaks things and swears off set.
Oh.
She just... No one can be that pure and sweet.
She's amazing. She's brilliant.
Yeah.
She's sweet. She gets frustrated with me because I'm she's pretty forward. She doesn't like Trump, but
yeah.
I do. And so yeah, we've had our moments. But at the end, you know, after we go through whatever topic, there was a big about a year and a half ago. There's a big thing with the NSA. The NSA wanted access to everyone's data, everything you've ever done or will do. They wanted to see it. Oh, I thought that was a bad idea. I thought it was an overreach. I said the Fourth Amendment protects anyone from being able to arbitrarily take my information unless I'm a suspect of some in some crime. And so Dana and Greg were on the other side of that, and we had some heated debates. I mean, we had some really, really contentious debates, but we get over it. And I think that's why it works, is because you get over it.
And you all bring, it appears, I don't quite know how the show is structured, but it appears that you all bring your own written perspectives to the table every day. Maybe you know where you're going as far as a topic, but none of you know what the other has to say about it. Is that right?
The way the show is put together is around 10 o'clock or 10:30 or so. An initial rundown, which the producers think is the right topics for this type of show for the day. I mean, most of the top three topics are going to be some of the same things you've seen throughout the day. Some breaking news, whatever. The next three or so are more unique to the five, more unique to our personalities. Maybe we'll play a little with, you know, Gutfeld's freaked out that the robots are going to take the world over, so we'll do a little of that. Maybe we'll do some business for me or some food for Kimberly, whatever. But the first three are generally the main three stories of the day. And then throughout the day, we tweak what we think where each should go. And maybe did you hear this guy said that? So let's get it in the show. We can talk about it. But for the most part, I have no idea what Kimberly, I have an idea what Juan's going to say every day, but the rest of them, I have no idea what they're going to say.
You know, it's Juan Williams is an interesting story. How he came, and I'm forgetting the details, but I do remember that it was Roger Ailes that gave Juan Williams a home after he was booted or very unfairly mistreated at NPR, right?
He was fired.
Fired. Why was that again?
Could be wrong. I think it was he was on an airplane and he made a comment about someone who was dressed in some Muslim garb. And I think NPR took offense to that. He may have tweeted it. He may have said it. I don't really remember what it was. But he got in trouble with NPR. Roger said, listen, you know, we're all about free speech. Come on over.
That, and I don't really care what anybody says about Fox News. You must give them their due for having the Juan Williamses regularly appear on shows like yours. The other networks, I don't think, are as hospitable. And if they are, they're much more hostile. You regularly give a format to people that are hard left.
Yep. We have a liberal point of view on every single five. when I've cashed in on Saturday morning, there's always at least one liberal voice, if not two. I may be the only guy who puts two liberals on with two conservatives and completely straight. You know, I mean, they're on MSNBC, you don't see very many conservative voices at all.
No.
At all.
And if you do, they're being badgered and ganged up upon and the whole deal.
Yeah.
One last question. How many of you guys see him? He just did this last week, fill in for O'Reilly. Have you seen him filling in? I asked you this on the show this week. That's got to be, when I see you fill in for O'Reilly, juxtaposed with the format of the five, that's an entirely different ball game, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Was that stressful the first time you did that, or nerve-wracking?
No. I loved it. It was amazing. I get called up to the second floor is where all the decisions are made, and I got called up by the executive vice president, Bill Shine, and said, hey, good news, you're going to fill in for O'Reilly. I was like, fantastic. It's great. And we talked a little bit about who was going to be on. And I was getting up to leave, and he says, are you nervous? I go, hell no, this is going to be great. I'm ready for this. Let's do this. And I walked out, and I turned around. I said, one question, tie or no tie? And I don't wear a tie. I got married without a tie. I, trading floor, I never wore a tie. CNBC never had a tie. The five. I turn, and Bill Shine says, no tie. That's your look. That's your thing. Literally, the phone rang that second while I'm standing there. And it was either Bill O'Reilly or his executive producer. I don't know who was on the other side. He's like, okay, all right, gotcha. Hangs up, you're wearing a tie. So I started wearing a tie.
Your numbers, Fox News, cable numbers generally, and CNN obviously took note. When that first debate happened, that classic first debate last August, we had a debate watch party. We were at Xfinity Live. We were watching it on a big screen in a room this size. Megan asked that question. Trump makes the Rosie O'Donnell joke. The room explodes. Ratings through the roof. And it seems like every time Donald Trump was on television thereafter, no matter where he appeared, ratings through the roof. CNN obviously noted that. He became more prominently featured there, too. Is he still the catnip for viewership a year later?
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's why he continues to be booked on shows. You want to hear what Donald Trump thinks about that. Or what is he going to say about this? I mean, and that's really, I think, why he has such an organic following. People are drawn to what he says because he doesn't hold back. And that's what I talk about in the book quite a bit. Well, a lot of what the left is doing is thought and the spoken and pushing back on the spoken word. In our college campuses, I have a son. This is really important on the timing of the book, too. I have a 17-year-old son who's going off to college in 5 weeks. We're in a situation where schools now, there's a school in Minnesota who just decided that in replacing algebra in part as a core curriculum, they're going to put in diversity training. Safe spaces on college campuses are more important than science. True story here. My son's applying to some really tough schools to get into, Purdue, University of Miami, Ohio State, Colorado. He's applying to these schools. And every one of these schools says, write an essay about what's important to you. And I literally told him, now you may think I'm wrong for doing this, but I literally told him, write about diversity. I didn't tell him what to say. I said, write about diversity. I go, look through their curriculum, find out what they're looking at, write about diversity. He did it. He put together an essay for each school. He got into every one of the schools.
Wow.
Every one of the schools. I'm not sure his grades were good enough to get into every one of the schools, but he got into them. That's what they want. The good news, the good news to this story is 2 nights ago, you remember when Elizabeth Warren was on stage with Hillary Clinton, and they're both wearing the blue pantsuits, twinsies. My son is watching the replay. I think it was during Hannity or maybe Megyn Kelly, and he looks up and he says, Dad, what are we going to do if she's president? And I never really instill conservative viewpoint to him at all. I just let him hear and think and do his own thing. I was like, great. You know, he gets it. That's really good. I'm hoping, I'm praying that 4 years he doesn't come out and say, Dad, what are we going to do if Trump gets elected president?
I mean, I was thinking about your story about your dad. Eric, sorry about your rotator cuff. Here's the paper. Go get a job.
Get a job.
Versus today, either out of need or just because culturally, it seems more and more kids that are of, you know, they would have that story to tell today. Maybe it's just, well, you got a lot of debt, so stay at home. and mom and dad will continue to go to work. I mean, that dynamic of the parents kind of, well, and frankly, I don't know. Do you think the economy, the marketplace, the school debt, can your story happen for kids today, your son, the way it happened for you?
That's why the book is written. There's a time, there's a line where we're going to cross where we can't come back. I think we're getting close to the line where we can't come back. So I can't tell you how many people have said, I bought the book and I'm giving it to my son. I bought the book, I'm giving it to my daughter. I just want them to read it. And that's fantastic because we outline 9 virtues or values, core virtues or values that the conservative movement should get back to. They're the ones that I think the founding fathers meant for the country to be instilled with. The ones that I am clearly thanking God for, and I hope we don't lose them, but the time is now to make sure we recognize what they are first, and then we start pushing back towards them.
What are they doing back there?
It's the tarps. It's a rain delay.
Okay? Can you hear all right? All right. I know it's a little echoey here. You got some, the Democrats are coming. Are you guys coming here for your show?
We are. Interesting. The Five is doing a 2-week road trip. So you'll find out who gets along, who doesn't get along. We're getting on a bus on July 15th at the studio, driving to Cleveland, stopping on the way. And then after the Cleveland convention, driving to Philly, stopping on the way, and then driving home on July 29th.
Wow. So it's going to be like a bus trip kind of a thing.
It's a road trip.
Like a real world
trip. A real one.
Are you going to have behind the scenes footage?
Behind the scenes. At one point, they were going to do a camera in the bus, a 24-hour webcam in the bus. Kimberly Guilfoyle squashed that. There's no way.
All right, let's go to some questions. Can you comment on Greg Gutfeld's remark that voting for Hillary because she's a woman is like drinking antifreeze because it looks like Gatorade? I think that's more just an excuse to share the comment.
That was a comment, not a question.
Probably not a question, but that's a good one. We did an event. How many of you were at the Gutfeld event? Was that last year we had Greg in with his book? Did some of you go? We had him out in Jersey. He's an interesting guy in that he did Red Eye for a long time, and Roger seems to have very eclectic taste and talent. Fair.
Roger's smart, too, though. Red Eye was provocative, but also somehow at 2 or 3 in the morning, I think it was 3 in the morning, they would put up numbers. They were beating CNN's primetime lineup at 3 in the morning with the younger demo, for the 25 to 54 demo, and that's brilliant. That's brilliant.
Tell us something you can't say on TV. Kathleen promises we can keep a secret. Is there something you can't say on TV?
In the day and age of cell phones, I probably shouldn't say anything I can't say on TV. I mean,
what are your edicts? Are there any rules?
Can I tell you how many times I've been in trouble for saying stuff on TV?
Bob got in a hell of a lot of trouble
for
saying things.
Well, Bob had a swear jar. Every time he'd swear, he'd have to put a dollar in it, and the thing filled up. But true story, the reason we're on a 5-second delay on the Five.
Yeah.
Like, we had never been on a delay before, but Bob was swearing so much on air that we had to go to a 5-second delay. So we end the show at 5:55:55. 5 seconds left, just in case someone swears, I can put a delay in there, and it looks seamless. You'll know if someone swears if all of a sudden we're talking, and then the camera pulls out to a really wide shot, and then the Five logo goes up for 5 seconds, and then you're back to normal. That means someone swore.
I think that's the secret.
For the record, Bob Beckel and Dana Perino are the only two who've ever been bleeped. Dana got bleeped.
Dana Perino?
I've never been bleeped. She has, for the record.
Now, I respect Dana more for that. I'm glad you told me that. I love hearing that. That show, in my opinion, the fact that you guys seem to feel so comfortable, at times it almost seems like you forget you're doing a television show.
Hence the trouble I get in sometimes. Yeah. Do I tell a story?
Yes.
See, I don't even think it was that bad. All right, I'll tell a story. I push you back against PC. I'll tell you something I can't say on TV again. So during maybe about a year ago, I guess it was about a year ago, maybe a little bit more, and like you say, it's so comfortable, you just get into the rhythm of things, and you're talking, And we were talking about how radical Islam hates the fact that women can succeed in the West. And so there was a story that there was a female Muslim fighter pilot who was dropping bombs on ISIS. And we were talking how great it was. Hey, take that, ISIS. Women can kill you. How's that? And Gutfeld says something like, yeah, but what happens when she gets back to the base? Will she be able to park the airplane? And then I say, well, you know, I guess that's the definition of boobs on the ground. It was a joke. I was having fun. Everyone laughed. Well, let me tell you, the left went apoplectic.
Oh, yeah.
This is a true story. We got a call from the Pentagon saying that some Democrat in the Pentagon was concerned that my comment was going to jeopardize the Arab coalition. Jeopardize for an off the cuff. So I had to apologize twice.
Wow. The five is going to jeopardize Arab relations.
Kyle and Serge are telling me to don't. They're shaking their heads saying, "Don't say anything." True story, though.
Are you surprised? Are you ever surprised?
I apologize anyway if I offended anyone.
No, boobs on the ground's a great joke.
It was hilarious.
I'd tell it. Now, are you ever surprised at who watches?
Well, by the way, Dana Perino helped me craft the apology. True story. It's like, listen, we gotta put this fire out right now. We sat there and we wrote it up, and she wrote it. I delivered it.
Who watches you? I from time to time I've heard stories of celebrities, politicians that watch Fox or will comment that they watch. Have you ever met someone of note, someone we'd know that you're surprised watches?
I'm surprised more people don't watch. It's regular people who love Fox. The celebrities hate Fox. Left Hollywood is so far left. I mean, it's rare. I saw Ricky Schroeder today on Fox and Friends. I saw, hey, great to see you. But it's so far and few between. John Voight likes Fox.
Yeah.
Chuck Woolery emails me all the time. $6 Million Man. Lee Majors likes Fox. But look, it's, you know, there's, you know, Justin Bieber doesn't like Fox.
Right.
You know.
What do you make of your cable competition? Do you think much about them? Do you talk much about them? Do you guys even notice or pay attention to what CNN and MSNBC are doing or not?
No, we're beating CNN and MSNBC combined, so no.
CNN specifically has clearly tried to do something different this season, haven't they? It looks like they've tried to do something different.
I'll give CNN credit. What they did is they recognized the power of the debate stage.
Yeah.
So they saw the first debate was the Trump debate when 25 million people came to watch. And CNN was smart. They said, you know, we don't have these debates on the schedule and they can't do it quickly. But they went to the town hall format. And town halls were really good. They're really high rated. And Fox is going, wow, that's a pretty good idea. And they jumped into it, too. But CNN beat Fox to the punch on the town hall stuff. We should have been doing that right from the get-go.
Mm-hmm. How do you convince, and this is from Bill, how do you convince irrational thinkers, such as George Will, that their logic can only keep the liar Hillary, or help the liar Hillary, get elected? Trump is logically the superior choice. How do you convince irrational thinkers? I don't think there's much convincing of George Will. I saw the debate between Bill O'Reilly and George Will on his book.
Tremendous.
That was a nasty little dust-up, wasn't it?
Yeah, so George Will, Bill Kristol, even Mitt Romney and all these never-Trump crowd, the establishment Republicans, they're destroying the party. They're if she wins, they're the reason. I mean, he has a legitimate chance to win the election. If you take Mitt Romney had a horrible 2012 election, terrible. He won, let's just give Donald Trump Mitt Romney's states. I don't think that's too far of a stretch. Romney didn't really kill it anywhere, surprising. So you give Trump those states. Trump only needs Florida, Ohio, and either Pennsylvania or Michigan. Pennsylvania or Michigan, not both. Florida, Ohio, and either Pennsylvania or Michigan, he wins. He's got the electoral votes to be president. It's not that hard. And wait, and also, He's tied in Ohio, and he's tied statistically in Pennsylvania. He's down by one in the last poll. He really needs to shore up Florida right now. Maybe that's why he should take another look at Marco Rubio. I'm not a fan, but listen, again, Hillary Clinton or Marco Rubio vice president, I'll take Marco Rubio vice president.
I just read today, I don't know how many of you guys saw it, but it was one of the lead stories on Drudge, that, I mean, according to the Washington Post, the top two vetted picks for Trump at this hour for Veep are, in this order, Newt Gingrich and Chris Christie.
I like Newt.
What?
I like Newt.
No Christie, is that, or not Newt? Like no, Christie.
I'm not, listen, he's my governor. I live in New Jersey. I wouldn't have picked him either. In fact,
Isn't that stunning? Think about 4 years ago, that man. I remember so vividly, Eric. I tell this story all the time. You probably remember it. The Reagan Library, the woman standing near tears saying, I understand you don't feel it's time, and I understand your family doesn't think it's time, but please, for the good of the country, sir, you must run. I did it. He was on my show. I begged him 4 years ago to run. I admit it.
That was his time. He had so much momentum, and then he didn't for whatever reasons. He was worried about losing. He was worried. He just and that's not what you want. Look, I love Newt Gingrich. He's a brilliant. You want to talk about a smart guy? Newt is really, really smart. But again, you want to win. You want to win the election. What does Newt or Chris Christie? What did they bring you to win the election? I don't think anything. I mean, I don't look. Think of it in a sports metaphor. You want to win the Super Bowl, right? But you got to win one game to get in the playoffs. If you don't win this game, you're not in the playoffs. It doesn't matter. That's where Trump is right now. You got to win this if you're going to fix the country, and Hillary's not going to be the president. So you may have to sacrifice a Newt Gingrich or a friend like Christie who came out first for you to get that one state you need to win the election. What does a vice president do anyway? Honestly, what do they do?
Well, if you're Joe Biden, I guess stick your foot in your mouth a lot. But other than that, yeah.
Listen, let's be thankful Joe Biden's not running.
Now, well, let me ask you this. I'm glad you said that. I just said this a little while ago to some friends before we came here. I still have a gut feeling something could go down where one of these two people, for whatever reason, and I'm not advocating it, I'm just saying there's something in my mind, and I don't know about you, that feels like these two are not going to be the two standing when we vote in November. Maybe she's indicted, maybe the Republicans pull something on Trump, I don't know. But if the Democrats toss her over, and I think it's likely, I think it could happen, they stick Biden in, and there's a real problem there, it seems to me, for Trump. You agree or not?
Disagree. I think that you're looking at the two nominees. The Democrats have done everything in their power to make sure Hillary Clinton's their nominee, from the DNC playing around with debates to the money to what it was. The books were cooked in favor of Hillary Clinton from minute one. She was going to be the Democrat nominee. Trump, I think that ship has sailed. The never Trump. The delegates are going to revolt and change. I don't think that's going to happen, because then you're guaranteeing a loss.
They never saw Bernie, though. The Democrats
saw
Bernie.
Absolutely agree. Totally agree. And I think that's Trump's real trump card. I think he can – look, let's do the math. I love the numbers. Bernie Sanders got 40% of the vote in the primaries on the Democrat side. She got 60. He got 40. 25% of Bernie Sanders voters said they would never, under any circumstance, vote for Hillary Clinton. 25% of 40 is 10. Mm. 10% of Democrats move over to, if Trump gets them over, they could never vote for her, never Hillary. If you bring them over, you win. You win.
You like that? You like that math? All right. Baseball. Any baseball fans here? Phillies fans? Yeah. Drafted by the Pittsburgh Pirates. Any Pirates fans? In the house by chance? There's one.
I see a Pirate fan there, yeah.
What do you make of the baseball scene these days? You watch. You said on the show that you still pay attention to your Cubbies.
How are they doing?
They're killing
it. They're
pretty
good, yeah. I love baseball. I love sports. I've also said in the show, you can put any two teams on almost any field, baseball or football or basketball. Not hockey, but the other three.
Yeah.
And I can watch them. I'll watch them all night. I'll watch them all day. Doesn't matter. Any team, any time, any level.
Bryce Harper said something interesting from the Nationals. Boo. But you're a showbiz guy now, so you might appreciate this. He feels like baseball's too restrictive. It doesn't allow players to be as flashy and the showman that the NBA or the NFL does. Do you agree or disagree?
Well, they all have their own. Brand protection is extremely important. So the MLB, the NHL, the NBA, they all protect that brand. Every team has their own brand, but the overseeing the oversight body, they're the real success for the leagues. They have the ultimate right. I think they're smart in what they're doing. They're keeping a close lid on the brand, making sure players can't go out and do stupid things and get away with it. Football, for some reason, these guys are getting into fights in bars, and they're shooting people, and then they're back on the playing field in a week or two. That's a little scary for me. I know Roger Goodell personally. I think he's a great manager, but I think he could pull the reins in a little bit on the athletes.
Yeah, and that character issue, that's the NFL and the character issue, it often, sports has become, like everything else, politicized. I mean, much to my chagrin, frankly. I would love if there's something in this world that we could just sit and take
Wouldn't
in.
Wouldn't it be nice if you didn't have to hear Bob Costas talk about guns at halftime of a football game? I'll take that.
But then you get some jackass who's slapping around his girlfriend or wife in an elevator, and we have to have that conversation. But I don't particularly. You're right. I don't want to hear it from Bob Costas.
Yeah.
You know. And I don't. That. Where do you come down on this national debate about our politics and sports and these people being, because you were an athlete, that age-old debate of are athletes role models and do they have a moral responsibility to conduct and comport themselves in a certain way?
Look, my son looks up to the athletes too, and I understand where the leagues want to keep a lid on what they're doing. I just don't know why ESPN has to have commentators that go so far politically over the line that they end up, half of them are getting fired. Schilling,
yeah.
Yeah, gets fired. Who's the other guy who's doing a podcast now? Fantastic reporter. Trashed ESPN about where they were on a political debate. He gets fired. It's crazy.
You guys don't do guests on The Five, do you?
Very rare. I tell you a funny story. Megyn Kelly was on today, but it's maybe once a month at the most. One time Bill O'Reilly was coming on to promote one of his books, and like, it's going to be great. At the last minute, we find out he's going to call in, so he's not going to be on set. So, like, all right, whatever. We'd rather have Bill sitting next to you talking. Turns out he calls in, and we talk, and I'm trying to figure out what. So I ask him, where are you? He's like, well, I'm in my office on 17 in the building.
So didn't want to come down.
I thought he was, like, stuck in traffic, and he was in the building.
That's fantastic.
He didn't want to come downstairs.
Who would you love to interview that you haven't? Do you have like a dream interview, a dream sit down with somebody?
Yeah, Hillary.
Hillary?
Oh, yeah, I love
what
that.
What's the first question you'd ask Hillary Clinton?
Why did you override Panetta and Obama and not send anyone to Benghazi? It had to be her. It had to come from the State Department to General Hamm, and someone had to tell Hamm, stand down, change their uniforms, do whatever you got to do. But 8 hours later, two more Americans died. I'm not saying they could have saved the first two, Ambassador Stevens, but they could have saved, I think it was Doherty and Woods, or the two that died later.
As shocking and scandalous as the details of Benghazi are, what we often forget, I've been talking about on the show this week, it's amazing, really. Hillary comes out and she says, well, $7 million later and we found nothing's there. Ha, ha, ha. Well, except for the fact she's being investigated by the FBI over her emails, which came out of this investigation.
Yeah.
So a whole lot came out of this investigation, actually.
And also that the fact that she was engaged in watching during the Benghazi, while the terror attack was happening.
Yeah.
We had all speculated on whether she knew or she was hearing about it, getting briefings. But in the 800 pages that came out day before yesterday, we find out that she was, quote-unquote, engaged. So she knew that it was going on and watching the events unfold and still chose to waste 13 hours before anyone came.
Is it known, accepted, joked about, irritating the Obama administration and Fox News and that relationship? I mean, we've heard everything from James Rosen quite literally being monitored and his parents being monitored at one point, to people not being called on in press conferences, people not being allowed access, they're not willing to come on. How would you describe Fox News's relationship with the Obama administration?
Horrible. Terrible. Yeah, President Obama, he'll do his, you know, his 20, 30-minute speech. He'll go around. Okay, when was the last time you saw a Fox reporter on camera asking a question? You'll see them later on talking to a press secretary or in a briefing. But in the big speeches, it's a rarity. He shuts us out.
Yeah. Have you met him?
Obama?
Mm-hmm.
No.
Who in the cabinet have you met? Have you met anybody?
Josh Earnest, Valerie Jarrett. Who?
Eric Holder.
Eric Holder, yeah. Eric Holder.
Any of them?
I see a lot of them.
Do you find any of these people forthcoming? Are there any of them that you say, you know what, I don't agree with what he's saying, but he's forthcoming?
Josh Earnest promised me he was going to follow me on Twitter, and he still hasn't.
Oh, by the way, you are on Twitter. People should know. How many of you guys are on Twitter? Any of you? Yeah? All right. Well, Eric, listen, I said I wasn't going to keep this any later than 9:30, and that's where we are now because I know you want to sign some books. But we are so grateful you hopped the train and came down here, buddy. Thank you so much.
I had a great time. I absolutely loved it. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Maybe we can have you back on when you come to town for the DNC.
Absolutely. Yeah, let's do that. Let's get together. We'll talk at the DNC.
Well, here's the way we're going to do this. Eric's going to go back in the back and sit at that table, and you guys can formalize, if you can hang in your seat for just a second while Eric makes his way.